RadioInfluence.com. The future is now.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Friday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Chili Chili Friday Val and
Beans. It is 28 degrees here.
It is negative six here.
It is?
Yeah, with the wind chill factor, it's negative six.
Feels what like is it really, six. Though?
It's probably low 20s.
Ugh, gross.
Probably, yes. But it's okay because I am going to have a really fun time getting my anus swabbed for COVID-19.
Oh my gosh, I was just practicing giving that test.
I plan on getting swabbed hourly just to make sure that I'm okay.
You know, I was going to do this once a week on date night, but I
honey,
actually
you want let's do some COVID swabbing tonight. That's new.
It's much more sensitive when you do it around the anus.
Hey, what's this other thing? I also just read that within the last week, Peter Strzok's wife became the acting director of enforcement at the SEC.
What?
I said, dude, I seriously, the federal government is one big swingers club. It's such a joke.
You know what we've got to do? We've got to just laugh about this stuff because
yeah,
it's getting scary. Okay, so I wanted to cover a bunch of stuff today. First of all, have you been following Robin Gamergate?
Oh, absolutely. I did a whole show on it last night.
Well, then you go ahead and explain to those out there who may not know what it is.
Well, I mean, let me pause for a second.
All right, so, we're back.
So to not mince any words, I'm gonna read you one of the better summaries that I read off last night. Here you go. And of course, this is outside of the great work that's being done at Uncover DC. Say this. Listen to this. I know at least one of my followers doesn't quite understand what is happening in the stock market right now, and that's enough to motivate me to explain because this is somewhat of a turning point in world history. First, you need to understand what a short is in trading. A short is when you borrow a stock from a broker and sell it immediately at its current price. Then you stop. You hope the stock's price falls such that you can buy it back at a lower price and return the shares you borrowed to the broker, keeping the difference. So, for example, let's say I want to short a share of XYZ, which has a current price of $10 a share. I borrow one share, so you don't actually own it. I borrow one share and I sell it immediately at $10. I have $10 now, but I owe my broker the one share that I borrowed. Then, let's say the price of XYZ drops to $7, so from 10 to 7. I now decide to cover or buy it back my short position and buy one share at $7 and return the one borrowed share up to my broker. I made $10 when I sold and only had to pay $7 to buy it back. Buy it back lower. So my profit at that point is $3 difference. This is why people, they do all these shorts. They're pretty much betting that something will go down. But now let's say that instead of XYZ price is dropping to $7, it goes up to $15. I still need to return the one borrowed share to my broker, except now it's going to cost me a lot more to buy it back. If I buy it back at $15 so I can return the borrowed shares, my losses will be the $5 difference between selling it at $10 and rebuying it at $15. Since the price can rise indefinitely, which is what's happening now.
Yes.
My potential losses as a short seller are unlimited. So at some point, I have to buy it back to return the shares I borrowed. The more prices rise, the bigger my losses. Now, for GameStop, a few weeks ago on Reddit, on the subreddit Wall Street Bets, they noticed that a hedge fund had taken a massive amount of short trades against GameStop. So they pretty much saw the writing on the wall for GameStop being that it is a brick and mortar store that sells and trades physical video games, gaming systems, things that are really becoming obsolete. GameStop is
it's like
pretty
a
much
Blockbuster.
Pretty much. It's becoming obsolete. So I don't fault anybody for seeing how there is certain markets that are in decline and on the way out. You could make a couple extra bucks in like this really predatory way with these shorts. But either way, this is what's going on. They saw what was going on at GameStop, and these Redditors noticed that a hedge fund had taken this massive bet that GameStop shares were going to tank. So they convinced everyone on the thread on Reddit to join forces and buy as much GameStop stock as possible. This made the price rise, and the hedge fund's short position started to lose billions of dollars. Their losses even surpassed the $13.1 billion that the hedge fund was worth. So eventually the hedge fund had to close their short positions, buy all the GameStop stock back at much higher prices, and it sent the prices even higher because of the buys. So this is right there when you have that price going sent even higher because all the shorts are being bought back. That's called a short squeeze. Now the hedge fund is declaring bankruptcy. The Reddit thread is combing through other hedge funds now with massive short exposures.
Like Nokia, BlackBerry.
AMC movie theaters.
Yeah. Now,
so they're starting to squeeze them into bankruptcy as well. And right now, I think as of last night, we were looking at total losses for these hedge funds of somewhere around $81 billion. And all the Wall Street saying that the public joining forces together it should be illegal, but really they just lost at their own game. And that's the point here is this is happening all the time, and whether or not this is going to cause a war with greater implications, because of course these hedge funds, they have a lot more powerful friends than we do, even though we can band together and we can cause some damage as well. The real question here is, do these hedge funds and these banking institutions that usually go on out there and are able to play with unlimited risk? I mean, we are the ones that usually bail them out when their bets go bad. And now everybody's calling foul because the rug has been pulled out from under them, from little people.
It's been absolutely fascinating to watch this happen because this is what's happened. It's so multifaceted. We just came out with an article just now. Larry Schweiker covered it the other day for us before anybody really knew what was going on, and it was fantastic. But now we have Michelle that came out with an article, The Explosion of GameStop and the Short Squeeze. There's a political facet to this. There's so many different facets. So these people on this Wall Street Bets Reddit page, it's not a political board. It's not. It's a bunch of different people. It's like 2 million members, all different kinds of backgrounds. A lot of, people who are kind of like millennial-esque in their late 20s, early 30s. They just have fun with stuff like this. This is just what they do. And since this happened, we've had some major folks come out, like billionaires that have come out and said, don't sell. Don't sell your stock. Keep your stock in game. Don't sell it, because they're trying to say, like, if you, they're saying, keep this war up. You know, like somebody, there was a couple of videos I saw of some really big heavy hitter money guys that are just, you know, entrepreneurs that happen to strike it rich and make a lot of money. I don't know their full stories other than Portnoy, who's just freaking hysterical. But they're saying, Frank, you know, I just cashed out $500,000 in Bitcoin and I'm pouring it all in to GameStop.
Here's the thing, Tracy, that gets me. I understand what's going on, but just consider being an employee. I checked this out last night before I went live. And GameStop, as of at least 2020, had about 22,000 part-time employees and 15,000 full-time employees. And now you think about how they still probably have a couple thousand locations around the country and places where it's a little bit more relevant, and
there's
people
three
are still
here.
There's three there. Yeah, there was two in my area as of a couple of years ago, but they're closing shop little by little. And still, like I said, it's a business that's becoming a little bit more obsolete. Can they modernize in some way? Perhaps. Some people think that could actually happen. But this is so much more than believing in what a company can provide the public. This is – imagine being a GameStop employee And seeing the stock, especially the employees that have stock in the company that, that comes along with their employment, to see the company become flush with countless millions of dollars at this point, and just to kind of know that in the end, it's not like they're going to see much of that. Maybe some people will hold on to their stock out of nostalgia, but it's almost like GameStop has become the centerpiece. It's become a centerpiece in a proxy war.
Yeah.
It's a proxy war between people and the banks.
Yes, it is a proxy war. And what has happened because of this is that Reddit and Facebook and even a platform called Robinhood, which is a trading platform, ironically created, it's technically for the little man to be able to go ahead and buy stocks in a big man's world, decided yesterday they were going to freeze and stop trade on the GameStop stock and a number of others, which absolutely infuriated people because it's illegal. You can't just decide you're not going to let people buy a stock just because you think you shouldn't.
Well over a dozen stocks, Tracy.
And they
put the kibosh on everything that's being countered.
Yeah. Yeah, so they're trying to now say, you guys, we're changing the rules mid-game here. You little people, go suck it. And we're going to continue to do what we want to do. And what it's doing is it's becoming a trickle-down thing where normal people who are just like, oh, GameStop stock, let me get involved in this, decided now or are seeing now for the very first time the censorship, the targeting. I mean, the media went after these people on this subreddit. They're being vilified, called extremist, alt-right extremist, this.
Of course, it's all, anything bad is alt-right now.
Yes, far-right extremists use GameStop chaos to radicalize and recruit on Telegram, Newsweek. this is the great private investors.
I saw Bloomberg. A headline from Bloomberg said they called it a stock insurrection,
yeah.
Tracy.
Yeah, we are insurrectionists. Anyone who bought GameStop stock, you look in the mirror, you insurrectionist terrorist, you. God, how dare you? How dare you make a profit instead of the hedge fund billionaires? And you know
how right wing.
How right wing extremist of you. And there was actually an article that Chris Cillizza wrote from CNN where it said that this was Trump populists asserting their dominance across...
You know, the best thing about populists asserting their dominance, these were tons of, I mean, obviously there's a lot of people who are a little bit more liquid that said, you know what, I'm going to throw $50,000 into this. You know what, I'm going to put $1 million into this. You know what, I have a little bit of money. I want to play Joker right now, and I just want to be part of the fun. But aside from that, they couldn't do any of this if it weren't for an army of little people armed with nothing but their stimulus checks. Remember, this was a stock that was trading at like $20 a share. If you send somebody $1,200 of stimulus check, you're arming anybody with the ability to get in on this.
This is hysterical. There's a post that's out there. The year is 2022. GameStop market cap is now valued at $50 billion.
No, you have to play Vivaldi. You have to play Vivaldi Spring from the Four Seasons when you read this.
Hold on.
And this comes with a wonderful Pepe with a top hat and a Chardonnay in his hand. Because remember, GameStop is just it's a little video game store. And now it's flush with billions of dollars of liquidity.
The year is 2022. GameStop market cap is now valued at $50 billion. Visit my local GameStop. The smell of urine, body odor, and energy drink burps no longer present in the air, instead replaced by a trail of petunias and daffodils leading to the revolving door entrance. Leave my coat with the doorman and check myself in before walking into the air-conditioned 2,000-square-foot, three-story building with valet service. Immediately greeted by the sounds of Vivaldi's Spring performed in the shop's Spring Quartet on the way in. Walk past the marble water fountains and Roman pillars to the used Blu-ray. pick up a $3 copy of the classic Nicolas Cage film Drive Angry. Guy in a tuxedo at the checkout puts on his white gloves and bags it for me while I enjoy a spoonful of complimentary caviar. Sign up for the pre-order list of Kerbal Space Program 2 and leave my signature in the guest book. Bellboy carries my bag for me to the entrance and wishes me a good evening.
It turned GameStop into the Waldorf. It's so great.
But so the article that Michelle did, which is absolutely amazing, has a couple of clips. A couple of clips from this. Hold on one second. I want to find it. Here it is. This is Portnoy. He's been really... Portnoy's from Barstool Sports. He's done a lot of really good stuff. Here we go.
Okay, emergency press conference time. Maybe the craziest one that I've ever done. And I've been ranting and raving all day. But what is going on Wall Street? The way they have absolutely cheated, stolen, robbed everyday people who have been investing with Robinhood and other E-Trade accounts and all this stuff. By saying, hey, hedge funds are getting smoked. Billionaires are getting smoked. So we're no longer going to let you trade on certain stocks, GMC, AMC, NOC. We're just shutting it off. You can't buy those stocks anymore. You can only sell them. We are going to crash those stocks so all our hedge fund billionaire friends can get out and not get killed. It is one of the most remarkable, illegal, shocking robberies in the history, in plain sight, no closed door meetings, nothing behind, just right in your face, putting a gun in your mouth and saying, give us all your money. That is what Robin Hood, crooks, jail, the Citadel, Ken Griffin, jail, Steve Cohen, the Mets owner, jail, are doing. Right in your face.
Yep.
They couldn't take that people on Wall Street Bets, Reddit, DDTG, fairly, open trade saying we're going to buy this stock fair and square. We know there's risk. It's going up. We know we're risking our own money, but we want to do it. To then say, sorry, you can't do this anymore. We are going to crash and tank the market because our billionaire hedge funds have shorted these and we don't want them to lose. Suddenly, volatility, we can't let you do it. We can't let you invest and put your money at risk. They have no problem when the hedge funds do it. When the hedge funds risk their firms and their livelihoods, that's fine. But no. When the everyday Jimmy and Joe wants to do it, it's a problem. We got to protect you. They are robbing you. They are stealing from you. This is criminal. The Robin Hood CEOs, they belong in jail. Ken Griffin, I just posted an article. He made $6.7 billion on the volatility of the pandemic. Now the volatility is a problem because they're losing. Jail. This is criminal. This is criminal. And the scariest thing is it's in plain sight. They don't want you to win because they want to save their yachts, their mansions, and everything else they have. It's okay for them to risk money and make money. But if you risk money and make money, no, we can't allow that. You don't know what you're doing. The only people who are smart enough or who are allowed to risk more than they have are the hedge funds and the billionaires. And if they lose, we're going to save them. We're going to save them at your expense. We're going to put the gun in your mouth and we're going to take your money and give it back to the billionaires because only they can make money. I have never seen anything quite like this. It's shocking. And the fact that they clearly, Robin Hood and Citadel, think they can get away with this, they have to go to prison. There has to be class action lawsuits against all of them. This would be the equivalent, I've said it, if you're in a football game and you go for it on fourth down, you don't get it, and then they call Bob up, we'll give you two more downs. You can't just change the rules without telling anybody in the middle of the game. Everybody was playing under the same set of rules. You can risk what you have, what your own money is, and if you make money, great. If you lose it, great. This is not fair. The billionaires, the hedge funds are saying, sorry, we are going to stop letting you buy these stocks. You can only sell them. We're going to crash the market to get our money back. And all you people who got fucked, well, fuck you. Robin Hood, prison. I spit a little bit. Just, I wish that spit went to Robin Hood's eyes.
This is basically it. And it's true. Now I've heard reports and seen reports, Frank, of people are actually, they're automatically selling their GameStop shares on those platforms because
the rumor was that these shares were being sold for them, quote, for their own good.
Yeah, for their own good.
Whose own good? For at what point do these institutions ever care about somebody's money being at risk? You put a dollar into the stock market, you risk losing it.
A dollar, yeah, or more if you're shorting.
The whole thing. I mean, in fact, and I love it. I love it. I really do love the what we're looking through here, because it just goes to show everything that we had known. And, you know, there's a lot of people that out there that don't really take part in the stock market. And now I'm one of them. But there's one of those things that you can just walk around with those cliches. We always walk around with those cliches, armed to the teeth with cliches. And one of them is that, you know, it's all rigged and this and that. It's very real, though, for everybody now, from all over, to just get a crash course in how completely rigged the financial system really is. And now more to see it, how it's not only it's only frowned upon when we get involved. It's frowned upon when we put the quote unquote squeeze on hedge funds, but it becomes our patriotic duty to bail these institutions out when they make bad bets that go, you know, that go the other way.
Not only that, but like all of Biden's administration is involved in Citadel. All of them. Citadel's the major firm that bailed out the hedge fund that was the first hedge fund to do this shorting. And this is waking up gosh knows how many people. Like, there are so many progressives that are doing this, that have done this. Makes sense. They don't like the billionaire. Let's do some little civil disobedience. Or it's not even disobedience. It's just buying something, which is your own free choice, supposedly, in this country. They're all now right-wing extremists, Frank.
I know.
the way this is over the top is really, really telling. I mean, you've got Mark Cuban getting involved. You've got all these people that are, you know, AOC's getting involved. Of course, she put herself in the center of it, but
of course she's the devil.
But I'm just saying, like, she said, good, Don Jr. and AOC with the same message.
Well, the thing here is this, and you have to separate the crap from everything else. AOC is crap, and the reason why I say this is that socialists with their gobbledygook. I mean, she looks at something like the markets, whether it be the stock market or the healthcare markets, anything that is where people can go on out there and hedge their bets on something and make a million or lose a million on their own accord. And, you know, everything in life is seeing where the wind is going, where the trends are going. It's calling up a friend. Hey, you want to do this with me? Trying to make an advantage for yourself and going out there and playing the game. And this is a big game, as you can see. There, it's a big game. Anybody who shorts a stock doesn't believe in the company. They're just playing a game to make money off of something that's dying. So, someone like an Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, they look at a market or any kind of an upheaval in a marketplace as fun because they're insurrectionists of their own. They believe that if they can control the financial output of a market like the New York Stock Exchange or something like that, they can subsidize everybody's Flintstones
right,
vitamins.
I know.
Yeah, but someone else, I mean, it's just really remarkable that they don't see how freedom is really liberating, that the only thing really holding people back is not that an AOC or a Bernie Sanders isn't there to help little people defend against the big people. We can do it already. What you need to do is divest government power from these corporate entities. Stop protecting and stop working with corporations and really make the market free and
tell people what their power is. Right. And they're already always complaining about that, right? I mean, that's their big message. Corporations, blah, blah, blah. That's their stupid message. And, you know, the thing about it for me that really strikes me, this could be a problem for finance. I mean, obviously, we're talking about tens and tens of billions of dollars in the markets right now. Everything is volatile. Everything's going crazy. Who knows what the end of this is going to be? But everybody's holding. Nobody's selling that stuff. Everybody's holding it. And what's interesting to me is the censorship that's taken place. I mean, blatant censorship. They have not broken any rules, these people.
Nope.
By getting together to talk about something they want to do together. They have not broken any platform rules. They've been banned everywhere. Google went in and removed 100,000 one-star reviews from the Robinhood app. This is what's going on. They think that if we don't see it, we don't know it exists. They're just going to try and wipe away history. But people are not that stupid. So everybody's sitting around now, like all of these people that were like, oh my gosh, right wingers, they're so stupid talking about censorship. Now they're like, oh my gosh. I saw a comment the other day. Guys, What happens if Trump was the good guy all along and we were just tricked into believing he was evil?
Who said that?
It was a user on Twitter I saw.
Oh, well, you would be finally starting to wake up.
This story is massive, and it's not going anywhere. It is all over the place. We're covering it. Everybody's covering it. And I want you guys to keep your eyes peeled on it, because it goes into a number of different things. So they've taken this, you know, free market exercise that folks have done, and they've turned it into something political, calling them far-right extremists. And what's been happening over the past couple days that I've been watching, do you see how hard they're going for Marjorie Taylor Greene?
Yeah.
They want her expelled from Congress.
Yep.
They want her out. They don't want her there anymore. They want to take your choice as a voter in Atlanta, say, screw you, we've made our own decision, you can take a hike, and install whoever it is that they think will be more beneficial to them. So there's a story I came across, and there's this legislation, Frank, by this woman named Murphy. She's Stephanie Murphy, Democrat from Florida. This is legislation that she's putting up there. The purpose of the bill is to require applicants seeking to obtain or maintain a federal security clearance. This means anybody who wants to be a representative, as well as anyone who wants to work in government, to disclose during their background investigation if they participated in the January 6, 2021 activity at the Capitol or a similar Stop the Steal activity, or have ever been a member of, associated with, or knowingly engaged in activities conducted by an organization or movement that spreads conspiracy theories and false information about the U.S. government, like QAnon, a group that has been tied to the Capitol attack.
A Capitol attack? You f***ing liars.
Basically, they are liars, but basically what she's trying to do with this bill... Who is the arbiter of what is a conspiracy theory or disinformation? We already know the answer to that question.
Them.
Anything that we say that they think is going to harm their power hold is a conspiracy theory. Everything. They have the stranglehold on information. Therefore, they can shape it to make whatever they want. People who went to Stop the Steal rallies were exercising their First Amendment right to petition the government. Over a failed
lies
election.
About the government. Oh, man. Don't even get me started about lies about the government.
It's bad. The objective of the background investigation or periodic reinvestigation in the case of an individual who's already holding a security clearance is to examine the individual's behavior, activities, and associations to determine whether the individual is reliable, trustworthy, of good conduct and character, and loyal to the U.S.
AOC accused Ted Cruz of trying to have her murdered yesterday.
I know.
And they want to talk about getting people and misinformation and liars out of public life. She accused Ted Cruz of trying to have her murdered. Murder. Her life ended. That's why she skipped the inauguration.
Yeah.
She was worried about Republicans who were armed.
Getting her this is murdered.
Oh, my God. My God.
So yesterday they had a clip on CNBC, I believe it was. Hold on, I'm trying to find it. It was them talking about the meeting that McCarthy had with President Trump down at Mar-a-Lago. And the funniest thing, it's actually MSNBC, sorry. Brian Williams is sitting there with, who is this? Bill Kristol and some other guy. Hold on. This is, they're saying, you know, President Trump met with McCarthy here.
Hold on. Brian Williams. This meeting today between McCarthy and Trump, will watch it and react on the other side. I love you. You complete me. I'm just as...
You had me at hello. You had me at hello.
Obviously, we have rolled the wrong clip, and we were sold a bill of goods here. I thought this was going to be of the McCarthy and Trump meeting, and someone's going to be, of course, in big trouble.
Get out of here.
They accidentally rolled Jerry Maguire.
Yeah. Get out of here. No, they didn't. They didn't accidentally roll anything.
They did.
That was an accident.
That was a complete accident. You should see Brian Williams' face. He's mortified.
Really?
Yes.
They played the entire clip and then said it was an accident.
Yes.
They didn't,
you should see his face. He is absolutely mortified. Mortified. They thought they had insider footage. But all I'm saying is there are little bits of disobedience happening everywhere.
Yeah, you know, somebody had told me, they said, Frank, you know, do you think that this is a what the hell they say? They said, you know, on the sixth people, the people were scared. The people scared the politicians. Not necessarily because, well, obviously they're acting scared about the attack on the Capitol. But the fact is that every time that we got together to show support of the president, it was by the hundreds of thousands, if not cracking a million, to whenever the hell it was necessary. They don't have those numbers. We are the majority in this country. And it happened over the last four years of them trying to suppress and delete and paint us and project their mandate that was not real. So they're scared. Politicians are scared. Nobody takes them seriously anymore. Obviously scared the bankers this week. And now somebody asked me, well, Frank, how do we scare the news? I said, they were the first ones to be spooked.
Yeah, they've been scared.
They're the first ones to be spooked. Last week you had Brian Stelter and a couple of his guests admit on CNN that daytime viewership is getting wrecked by random YouTubers.
Yeah.
And then they fantasize about getting OAN and Newsmax taken out by cable providers. They are completely obsolete and scared. And they were the first ones to be spooked, the media.
100%. And they're going after they're going after everything. They're trying to get Telegram deplatformed. You guys, the holes, right? They're putting their thumbs in these little holes. They're trying to plug up these little holes. People are going to figure out how to talk to one another. And they're going to organize. And what this is ultimately going to do to you idiots out there who are listening, not the listeners, the people that listen to this show looking for things because they exist. What you're going to do is you're going to bridge the divide between people who are supposed to hate each other by bringing them together via this one share. You're so over the top as you try and hug. You know, they should have left us all alone. They really should have. They could have probably affected their agenda so much more easily if they just left us all alone. But what they're doing now is waking the hell up out of everyone. People are like, oh my God, was that thing that they said months ago actually true? Are they right? Look at what they're doing to my friend over here, labeling them things and calling them names. What is this? I thought they were our side.
There's only one side, and they play us against each other, so that they can put everything into their little black sacks, all that they can walk around the house while we're fighting with each other in the living room. They walk around the house into all the bedrooms. They take all the jewelry, and they take all the precious heirlooms, and they put them into nice velvet black sacks, and they walk out the back door. And then, of course, they load up their trucks. They come back in and they start mediating the fight again. And of course, they're always the winner.
I want to go back to the guy I was talking about with the Bitcoin and play two clips of him. I don't know who he is, sadly, but I want to play these two clips for you because it's hysterical. Here.
So as it stands, there's a hedge fund manager who, when it wakes up tomorrow morning and Wall Street opens, if the GameStop price opens at the current price, he's going to lose $13 billion, his entire hedge fund. So me and Lucas, we just cashed some Bitcoin. We're putting 50 grand, 50 G's,
yep.
50 grand in at GameStop at this price. I don't give a if I lose it all. I don't give a I just want this hedge fund manager piece of these Wall Street greedy bank pig I just want him to lose. And now I've been reading more and more. These Occupy Wall Street guys are doing AMC, BlackBerry, whatever. I'm cashing. I'm putting this right now. I'm cashing $500,000 of Bitcoin right now. And I'm going all in, maximum leverage, all in on all these stocks. Luke, we're losing all the money. We are taking down Wall Street. We're going to take them down ourselves. I'm taking Wall Street down. Watch me. F them all.
See? Now, first of all, that guy is he's a man after my own heart with his language.
Oh, just but wait.
But you see, this is the whole thing here. I always say socialist gobbledygook. You know, it's always about we need a movement. We need a movement led by government.
Yeah.
We need a movement led by government.
Yep.
You know, and then all of a sudden, so you think about all of the Occupy Wall Street we had to live through 2010, 2011 with a bunch of unwashed hippies that were camping out in Zuccotti Park in New York.
No. They're not Occupy Wall Street. They're far right extremists, Frank.
I know. Well, at this point they are. Yeah. At this point they are. I went down to Zuccotti Park and everybody's talking about get rid of our student loan debt. Get rid of our student loan debt and raise the minimum wage. I said, wait a second. What the hell is this? So, I mean, I walked out of there. I said, well, that's a lot of wasted energy. Now look at this, 72 hours, and they actually occupied Wall Street.
Literally. And you know,
the
funny thing is that I was at Occupy Wall Street too, and we got maybe 20 to 25 people. We got them all. We taught them about the Federal Reserve, and we organized a quasi-march down to the Federal Reserve, and we started Occupy the Fed.
I went down there looking for, and the Fed people, I only found one. I said, well, I thought that everybody here would be talking about the Federal Reserve and central banking. And I only found one. I said, oh, and I interviewed that guy. His name was Jason. We stayed in touch.
What's crazy is that we probably would have seen each other if we were there years ago. Here, this is the guy again. He's, listen to this.
Just enjoying my bagel, sitting in my Maserati, watching the epic struggle of good versus evil. David versus Goliath. This is biblical, what's happening. People don't understand. This is finally we have a chance to damage these. They're basically bulletproof all the time. Bank bailouts, government bailouts, sitting around, jerking off. And they can't be hurt or affected. But now we got a little wound. We dug a little knife in. We just have to keep twisting. We can't give up. We must have diamond hands. Listen, why the would you take a few fiat dollars and give up your chance to destroy a hedge fund? Don't take profit. Don't give up. You have to keep fighting. Keep buying the stock. Refuse to sell. I'm prepared to lose everything. I don't care. Why would I want profit? Ooh, profit, money. No, I don't want money. I already have a bagel. My life's fine. What I need to do is collapse a hedge fund. And everyone here, you need to help me. This
please
is
send me these
beyond
clips.
Good versus evil. These are the people who keep their boot on your neck. And their neck, they've had their boot on the neck of the financial system for years. Finally, we have a chance to fight back. Do not be a pussy. Diamond hands. Everybody.
Diamond hands.
Diamond hands.
I'll tell you what I did. Now, first of all, please, Tracy, send me all of those clips.
Yes. Yes, I love this.
I mean, that is, it's just so amazing.
He's such and an alpha male.
The thing that I saw people saying that they're going toward next is a silver squeeze.
Silver, yes.
Now, this is funny because I don't buy stock. I don't have any Robinhood apps or anything like that. But I have been buying silver, physical silver. And I was looking into this like, what is everybody talking about with this, with the silver squeezes and this and that. And I went on into it and I was learning about how the price of silver has been depressed by these traders, especially the banks that are trading in paper silver and over leveraging and all that. And that the actual price, if you go to I know that the U.S. debt clock website. If you go to usdebtclock.org, I go there often just to be able to track the U.S. national debt in real time, everything, interest on the debt, everything. But even over there, I was wondering, I said, why the hell does it say dollar to silver ratio? The dollar to silver ratio on usdebtclock.org is actually 4,789 an ounce. And then dollar to gold ratio per ounce is close to $35,000.
Wow.
If you go to sdbullion.com right now or any place that trades, you can buy a 1 ounce silver round for $25. Tracy, I took before any of this hit me about a day ago where people said, hey, let's squeeze silver next so that we can actually get it revalued to where it is and actually destroy the banks altogether. I already told people a couple of weeks ago, when my stimulus check comes in, I am throwing the entire thing into physical silver. And I bought that. If this is really where it's going next, I'm going to buy myself another $1,300 worth of silver this weekend.
None of the things said here today are meant to constitute financial advice or
not at all. Not at all. This is just,
we are not brokers. We do not know what we're talking about. We're just two people who want to put our feet on the bank.
That's it.
Diamond hands.
Oh man, I would have diamond hands. I would love. That's just man. Oh man.
We are not giving investment advice. We are not.
No, not at all. Not at all. I already told you. I don't know what the hell's going on here. In fact, this entire thing was the first time that I was actually able to understand the mechanics of shorting a share of stock. I understood the concept that a short was betting against the market because I was first exposed to this back in 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
Because the CIA and a few other investigative bodies started realizing that the 4 weeks leading up to 9/11, ending on September 10th, there was a major shorting of airline stocks across the board. The parent companies of United and American, there was a major shorting. We're talking 30 to 40% even more. So someone on September 11th, or at least on September 12th, when the stocks hit bottom, they made countless millions of dollars off of that supposedly spontaneous event that took everybody by surprise. It's something that's really interesting here. And I said, whoa, what the hell does that mean? You know, what does that imply? I mean, obviously it's a terrorist attack one way or another, regardless of who you think the terrorists were. So why not make extra money off of it as well as getting whatever your main goals were?
Yeah.
So that's the first time I learned about it. This was the first time I actually understood the mechanics of a short, because that
it's
didn't
difficult.
Make me
it's
want.
It's confusing shit.
It is.
Who wants
it
to
is.
Know about that stuff? Now, well, not only silver, which I, by the way, have also been looking into buying this morning, because you might as well do it now. Well, I'm not telling you what to do, of course. I'm just doing it for myself. Bitcoin is back at $38,000 a coin. Up 37,286.19, up 16% today. It was lowest. Let's see. It was 32,000 a coin back at 3 a.m, and it shot up this morning after the market opened, and now it sits at 37,286.
Another thing I know nothing about.
Bitcoin.
Yeah. I mean, I have some crypto currency because people said you should open up some crypto wallets so that people can just donate to you. So people have sent me little bits here and there over the past couple of years, and it just sits there. I don't move it around, and I don't know how to use it.
Just to give you an idea, back in March when the pandemic hit, Bitcoin was $3,000 a coin. $3,000 a coin. And I looked at it and I said, wow, that's not going to last. So I bought some, and now it's at $37,000 a coin.
I hope you sat on it.
Of course. I'm never selling my Bitcoin.
Just sitting around. I just opened up my Exodus wallet right here. And Bitcoin is at $37,244.99. It's up 16%.
It's up 300% this year.
But yeah, but recently, I guess maybe like a jump within the last 24 hours, 16.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I have $145 worth of it.
Do you have like 0.00001
Hitachi? I have 0.00389745 of a Bitcoin.
I also have Ethereum, Litecoin, Bitcoin Cash, Stellar, Chainlink, and Graph.
Yeah, I don't have too much of anything, either way.
It's a volatile, and it's volatile. Just expect to be raked through the coals if, you know, just put money, if you're going to buy crypto, put money in there and expect never to see it again. But on the off chance that you buy Bitcoin when it's, I didn't buy a full coin, but when you buy Bitcoin at $3,000 and it shoots up to almost, it was at 42 a week ago, you make some money, just a a little bit of money. What is that?
A little bit of money.
If you would have bought one Bitcoin at 3,000 and it shot up to 42, what would you? You would have made. You would have made $38,000.
No, I like calculating how it was if you put $17 into Bitcoin in 2009.
Oh man, my friends, all of my friends back then were like, buy Bitcoin, buy. I'm like, yeah, okay, crypto, whatever.
No, I mean, it's serious when you're talking about people where it's like $90 million plus dollars.
Yep.
from a $20 bill.
Yep.
That was because it wasn't even a penny. It was fractions of pennies.
I know. And the thing about it is, like, I still don't understand how, like, to me, it's still tied to the fiat dollar. It's still tied to the dollar. Its value is tied to the dollar. But it's a finite resource.
But how?
Because
how is it a finite resource if it's digital?
Because they only allow you to mine a certain amount.
And that's never going to change. And there's no way that any of this is hackable.
Right.
There's no way that any a digital currency, it's more secure than a bar of gold.
Well, it's the blockchain.
I don't understand what that is. People always say, no, listen, it's on a blockchain. It's better. Like, you know what?
You can't ever go back and change it when it's written to. We'll just put it that way.
I don't know. When it comes to money and voting, I'm just like, give me paper and give me medals.
Well, there you are.
Everything else, I will journey with you into the future, and I will go into Star Trek dimensions of technology. We can talk about all types of innovation, but when it comes to money and voting, just give me paper and metal.
Paper and metal.
Yep, paper ballots and metal money.
And, you know, I might, Frank, might have a interview coming up today, depending on if the person is ready. Like, there's a chance the show might be 2 hours today, guys.
Wowee.
I'm not going to know. I'm recording it, obviously, before I know. So if you've gotten to this point in the show and you're like, ooh, there's not 2 hours, it's because we weren't able to get together today. But I will be interviewing, hopefully today. Frank can't join me. If not today, then definitely Monday. Jovan Pulitzer.
Man, oh man.
About some things. Some things are going on, I guess. He wants to talk about them.
Well, the fight needs to start. The fight needs to keep up with somebody.
Did you see? Okay, so when he first started getting mentioned and stuff in the election integrity fight, I started looking him up. Do you see the smear job the legacy media did on this poor man?
Yeah.
It is. He was a failed treasure hunter. A failed inventor. He invented some stupid scanning thing, but that's not the man. The man is not just those things. So I'm going to ask him about all that stuff. Just let him get it out once and for all and tell us what he's really about from his own mouth, because he's meeting with people that he wouldn't be meeting with if he wasn't a serious person. So
I wonder if Dominion's going to. Oh wait, no, he didn't really go down the Dominion route. He went down the actual
paper ballots.
He went down the paper anomalies.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So at least he's not going to be sued for. I guess this is just like a default price of $1.3 billion.
Yeah, that's what they valued the harm at there, because you know everybody thinks it's a conspiracy theory, Frank.
Yeah.
So that's why they're so harmed by it. You know, you'd think people would be like, oh my gosh, that's such a conspiracy theory. Let's get all Dominion machines. Why would they have lost business if none? Why? It's just, I mean, the legacy media has told us it's a big conspiracy. They've spent a lot of time telling us how much of a conspiracy all of this is.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
You want to end with something funny? What's funny, Frank? Do you have anything funny?
Do I have anything funny?
Yeah.
I don't know. I've been really, I'll probably think of something after we get off, but I think that the memes in 2021 have far surpassed the memes from 2019 and 2020
already?
Put together. I mean, just with the Robin Hood GameStop stuff, like I love even just the tweets. I mean, there, you know, did you see this tweet from Bryce DuPont? he put out there this whole thing, as you know, that many of the people who have jumped into the stock war right now, they're all people from Reddit. So we've got we have, you know, it's just like you have these big names and these big hedge funds. And then, of course, the new big players on the field are people with ridiculous screen names. So
like what?
Bryce DuPont put this tweet out. It's hilarious. He says, here's the top five richest people now. Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates, Bernard Arnault, and retard 6969. And then there's another one. Retard 6969. There's another one that I love. There's a Pepe. There's another Pepe meme. I guess he's a stockbroker Pepe. He's just this fat stockbroker broker Pepe, and he's on his iPhone. He's calling his client. And he says to his client, he says, I'm sorry, Mr. Goldstein. Your shorts have been bought by Balls of the Sun and rapist Peter Griffin. You owe them $14 billion. It's just so great. It's been amazing.
You know, Will, my husband, just sent me a picture of the television. It's Call of Duty. He's playing Call of Duty. He loves that game. The message of the day from activism, commitment to positivity. It says, we welcome all players to Call of Duty. We're here to have fun. Hate speech, racism, or toxic behavior won't be tolerated. If you see it, report it. We're committed to building a positive and inclusive community together.
Can I just say that hate speech and what people call racism was some of the best times you could ever have on Call of Duty or SOCOM and anything like that.
Yeah, because people are busting each other's cojones.
Yeah, and it's not. And it's like, well, the racism. You would think that it's a bunch of white kids on Call of Duty, calling black people horrible names. Yeah. The black people are just like, hey, boy, I just want to enjoy myself. Stop calling names. the black players are the worst.
They're horrible.
And they throw it back. And it is abrasive to listen to if you're not used to what this is all about, but it's anonymous voices over a video game that you'll never talk to ever again because you're randomly paired with these people inside of these games, and everybody rags on each other. They say the worst shit. They try to get a rise out of people, to try to get inside their heads. And I mean, I actually never really partook in it. I just was part that would listen to other people do it and just laugh to myself on mute. The whole thing was just funny.
It is funny. And, you know, it's funny, it's too, because Will doesn't typically use his mic. Sometimes when he gets really pissed, he'll pull it down and use it. It takes a lot to get him to that place. But sometimes I hear it, because when he's not using his headphones, I can hear some of this stuff. So, did you ever hear the people that accidentally leave their microphone on?
Oh, I hate it.
Or the people that leave their microphone on purpose, but they're blasting like rap music in the background.
I hate it. I hate it. How anybody, why do you do that to people when you're playing and you have this awful rebroadcast of shitty music coming through a headset, thinking everybody else is going to find it to be pumping? First of all, I don't know how anybody plays music when you're playing a video game.
No,
I need
to
be inside the game audio. I need to be in the game.
Yep.
I mean, maybe if I'm playing baseball, I don't need, if I'm playing like The Show or something, I don't need to hear the crowd sounds. Sometimes I'll play it on mute if it's late at night and I don't want to have the headphones on. That's fine. But like a Call of Duty or anything like that, you got to hear when somebody's coming up behind you.
Footsteps and everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
The worst. it's crazy because like, oh, shoot, I totally forgot what I was going to say. I lost it completely.
Talking about, censorship, bullying, no more bullying, hate speech.
Yeah, no, it's not.
They sent it out to Will. They sent out
I feel like we're in charades or like $20,000 pyramid or whatever.
Yeah.
You're like sitting across from me explaining the pyramid category. Hold on, I'm pausing it. I need to remember what I was going to say. It's gone. It's never coming back. It's gone forever. I don't understand.
It'll be back in 15 minutes.
Yeah, as soon as I start doing my next task, it'll pop into my head, and then this is it. But, guys, you have been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with...
Chili Chili Friday Val and...
Beans! You can find us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern Time on TuneIn, Stitcher, Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and RadioInfluence.com. Until Monday.
Later.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. It is Beans. Back from the future. Back from the future. Joe von Hutton Pulitzer was kind enough to join me for an interview today. His schedule got a little bit delayed, and we met a little bit later than we thought we would be meeting. But we were able to get it in on this podcast. Producers at Radio Influence are fantastic. So for now, enjoy Dark to Light. I am honored to be joined by Joe von Hutton Pulitzer of the Gold Institute for International Strategy, joining us from a remote location in a bunker somewhere. Joe von, thank you so much.
Happy to be here. I'm excited about it.
Good, good, good. We have been following you and your little, your huge undertaking that you've embarked upon here for election integrity. As a matter of fact, before I was banned from Twitter, I highlighted a portion of your testimony in, I believe it was in Georgia, where you were talking about, you know, the sanctity of the vote and what it means, and had an engineer kind of counter with you. Remember?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that was
absolutely.
That was a clip and a half. I loved it. It was just so perfect. So I guess before we get into the meat of what you're doing right now, which is so important, tell us a little bit about your involvement in all of this over the past several months.
What I noticed is, like every other American watching the election, I was kind of floored when all of a sudden on night they said, okay, we're going home and we'll get back at it tomorrow. So that was my first heads up that something was potentially wrong, if not nefarious. And then, of course, we all woke up to different numbers the next morning. And so why I hopped into it is because, you know, two decades ago, I created the platform that makes all of these codes or barcodes or all of this stuff actually talk across the internet and track documents and voter registration and all this stuff. And so I kind of knew what I was looking at. Therefore, I knew how things like this could, should we say, be rigged or broken. And so I threw my hat in the ring to say, you know what, there's an easy way to solve this and people don't have to be distracted, whether it's a server or whether it got shipped off to Italy or Germany or what was the secret special sauce code. We could just look at the ballots, because the way I look at it is our country was founded on an incredible piece of paper. That's our Declaration of Independence. But I'll be damned if I want to see this nation fail because of a simple piece of paper we call the ballot. So I'm setting out to fix that.
And you know, I could have sworn you were inches away from getting your hands on the ballots in Georgia. And then it sort of just disappeared. What happened?
Well, if anything I've learned in the political arena is that nothing is ever what it seems to be. And in this time where up is down and right is left and everything in between is racist, there are so many hooks and crooks, literally, in this process that it always moves. And so in the Georgia one, you saw the Georgia Senate did their review. I went in and talked to the subcommittee. I showed them what was up, showed them how, unlike what Krebs said, hey, it's paper, folks, paper can't be hacked. I showed them, in fact, paper can be hacked. And they voted unanimously to allow us to audit the ballots, not the machines and all that other stuff. Well, it only took about 24 hours for the opposing party to be upset with the Georgia Republicans. And they filed a legal maneuver, which moved it to a judge, which a judge says, OK, I'll rule on it. And then another legal maneuver took it from that judge, threw it to another judge. And that ping pong process has gone on and on and on. In fact, the only thing that's changed in this process, aside from waiting to do an audit, is the actual Republicans there in Georgia that voted to unanimously audit it. Well, the Democrats are in control and they removed every one of those council or those members from those committees. So they booted them out for going against them.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow. And that's and the day, November 9th, January 6th, I believe it was actually, you did a Periscope or a short Twitter clip where you were talking about Ruby and you were basically saying she could be the next Rosa Parks. And I'm just curious, did you actually speak to her? Is she like teetering on the edge of coming forward with information? Because she was the one who was kind of driving the process of all those ballots under the tables, etc.
I think, you know, first off, what is interesting a little bit in hindsight. We've all seen ballot batch loading and ballot scanning and ballots coming out from the table that they said didn't come out from the table, but did come out from the table, to videos of her saying, let's get the ballots out from under the table. Oh, no, it's not now. We're watching. I basically was working on a calculated risk that people were dialoguing with her, and I had heard chatter. And I basically think there sometimes, regardless of what your intent was, and some say that many will rig the election, they don't care about it, they just want to have it their way. But I think sometimes, regardless of what your political beliefs are, that sometimes maybe your ethic and your commitment to this country and all the people in the country might have a better purpose. And I was trying to appeal to her to say, look, you are a linchpin here, and you can make a difference by exposing this. So instead of playing for one side and always being an internet meme about, hey, ballots being stolen or coming out of nowhere, why don't you just step up and become a leader yourself, just like Rosa Parks? And why don't you just buck the system? And bucking the system is literally just come forth, call it what it is. Let's get this cleaned up. But maybe, you know, there we have to do a revote. Let's let the chips fall where they are. So I was trying to let her know it was her place in history to maybe do this. Now, I know there are many dialogues going around, and I know in Georgia is still in chaos, and people are being – there are people inside Georgia at strategic positions that know, saw the fraud, saw the things that were going on, questioned them, and they're being suppressed and harassed and potentially run out of office or lost their jobs. And even a meeting I was in just a couple of hours ago, one of the presentations was how various people in election overwatch and audit were letting Governor Kemp know, hey, this is going on, and these are bad registrations, and these are not really authentic. And they actually showed where Kemp and others just said, stop reporting this to us. We're not going to do anything about it, but quit reporting. Wow. Because you're creating a public record. And that's just not okay.
No, it's not okay. It's actually horrible echo all of a sudden. Okay, that's better. It's not okay. It's actually terrifying. As a matter of fact, you know, just the mere mention right now of election integrity and what could have happened during the 2020 election is enough to get you put in a gulag somewhere, either technically on the internet and elsewhere, or even in real life. We're starting to see this happen where out of Florida today, a representative is advancing a bill to stop anyone who attended any Stop the Steal protest anywhere from ever being able to obtain a clearance if they wanted to work in government, become a representative, etc. So my question is, why would you hide all of these ballots from people who have the scientific ability to take a look at them and see if they were valid? If they're valid, there's no reason for this, is there?
Not at all. People need to remember and reinforce and scream about the fact that, look, you as a taxpayer paid for the printing of those ballots, the mailing of those ballots, the voting machines, the tally machines, all the people to run the election, all these politicians that are either helping or hurting the process. You paid for them. Now, these ballots and everything to do with them, and it specifically names paper, is covered under U.S. Code 42-1974 and U.S. Code 52-20701. And they say that these must be kept and available for audit up to 22 months after the election. And so these politicians are hoping nobody really presses that, and they're using smoke and mirrors to try to keep people away. And the bottom line is, because they know there are problems. Now, for all of these problems, they have, quote unquote, engineered solutions to make you look the other way, kind of like, hey, made you look. And it's all designed to make you look exactly in the places where the corruption isn't. But what I realize is going on right now, when I was able to show the public how easy it is to determine if a human hand voted that ballot, or how easy it is to determine if that ballot was even mailed, and if it wasn't mailed, then why are you calling it a mail-in ballot? It should just be set aside. And I think that basically scared the daylights out of them. And so they're actually working on a two-prong approach. They're throwing up every challenge they can throw up, and then they're going to the other side and making people throw up by saying, we will discount you, we will run you out of town, we will haunt you if you do this. And so they're trying to get enough punitive force in effect. And it's specifically designed, something they complain about, voter intimidation. You know, they don't want you to intimidate any voters or even have any appearance of intimidating somebody if they have a certain pigment. But however, on the other side, if you lack any pigments or have too few of pigments in your skin, they are all about voter intimidation and technology and truth intimidation, and they will shut you down. And so they've got this punitive cause and effect in place, and they are trying to make examples of people, and they are literally doing a technology crucification. And it's very funny. It's not, you know, Antifa, anti-fascist. What it's really, Antifa means we are anti anybody who is not fascist, and that's what's going on.
Yeah, and you know, to be honest, I've seen this crusade, especially against folks like yourself. So they came after you pretty hard and said all kinds of things about you, Jovan, like you're a failed treasure hunter, and that you made, you know, some little nonsense gadget, and you're claiming. Can you, just for everyone out there who might have been like, oh, Jovan is this, this, and this because the legacy media said so, explain some of that stuff to us? Because I know what they do. I've been a target of it myself.
Sure. It's really interesting. Basically, when they attack me, I'm kind of one that goes at it head on and say, is that all you got? Good thing you didn't find out about my Hollywood buddy and that I knew long ago, and that was my damn hamster. I just like take it away from them. But the reality is, I just look. My technology record is absolutely solid. People have to put it into basically perspective to understand what they're being told. My technology patents, which created this, where you can scan any code with your phone and go to the internet and do interactions and buy products, and it knows who you are, and you don't have to enter your credit card information anymore, or the website remembers who you are, or the website from the computer adjusts for your phone. Those are all my patents. What they write about is, they write about when I had to give eyes to computers, and I did the first handheld scanner that for consumers that went to your computer. Now, I have no idea how they get that it was a failed technology, other than that's just a bullshit myth. It was the actual most adopted internet peripheral in history ever, the fastest adopted. It was absolutely free. So how can you be a failure at something what you gave away free, that people lined up waiting for malls and stores to open to get one of them? Mm-hmm. And so that's just kind of how they attack at a credibility standpoint. But you know what? Here's my standard. If the fact that my patents have become some of the most successful internet patents ever, that they're licensed by over 400 of the top manufacturers, and that they allow operations on 12 billion plus devices around the globe. If that is the new standard of failure, then you know what? I embrace it. I failed.
Good for you. That's awesome. And you haven't stopped doing this. I think a lot of people are very disheartened about all of this stuff because they feel like, oh, it's over now. Nobody's, you know, doing anything anymore. But you haven't stopped doing
not
this
at
stuff.
All.
As a matter of fact, Arizona, I just saw some stuff about you yesterday in Arizona. You were going to maybe head out there for the audit in Arizona, but what happened?
Well, it's still in process. Let me go back and just address the thing. You know, they called me I don't know how they called me a failed treasure hunter. You know, I've written several hundred history books about searching for lost treasures. The reason I have a professional exploration team that goes around the globe searching for these things is because I'm successful. If you think you can take 40, 50, 60 people and put them on the ground and support them for 30 days in the wild, you try it. You have to be a success to be able to do it.
Yeah.
And so they kind of use that because I was on television. And television, you know, they have liberty with your words, which you know. And so they try to use that to diminish me. And so that diminishment jumps over to states like Arizona. You know, it's very interesting. Arizona wanted to disqualify using my technology because there was a photo that existed of me and Rudy Giuliani. And I'm going, wait, you want to disqualify me for a photo? I said, number one, I never met Rudy before in my life. And that was in Georgia when I testified. He wanted to shake my hand and I got a photo. For God's sakes, he saved, you know, New York City in 911. So that was very, very important. And so I think that's how they try to work to minimize it. And so the election boards there in Arizona use these little tricks and techniques. And so what they're doing right now that's going on is they are actually using a game of smoke and mirrors to keep these things from being audited. And so if you watch in Arizona, where Maricopa County Board of Supervisors was sued by the Senate and actually was told, okay, hey, here is we'll do an audit. Here's what they're really saying. We'll agree to an audit as long as you use exactly my people that they say they want to use, and we'll tell you what machines you can look at, and we will tell you what ballots you could look at, or we'll tell you what software you could look at, but only thing you can confirm is that the machine is working and will transfer a ballot. All of this supposed audit is designed for smoke and mirrors. Let me give you an example. Imagine in Georgia, they're going to say, hey, we're going to do a signature audit. And you probably heard that. And they came up with two signatures that was actually made by one person because she was signing her husband's name. Here's what they don't tell you. Imagine these ballots in foot lockers, in boxes. Now, on the outside of the boxes, there's a code number on it. And so they go, okay, we're going to do a transparent audit. And all these boxes are kind of stacked. And they go, we'll just randomly pull some boxes and we'll let you look at it and do the audit. Well, the people pulling the boxes know exactly what that code means. And they know if they pull the box with the positive number on it versus the negative number on it, right? They just pull those boxes because those are the districts where they're not cheating and they know they run a tight election because they can't get in. So they pull those boxes out and go, hey, it's random. Take a look at this and you don't find anything. All of it from beginning to end is designed to usurp the vote. And here's another example I give people, and all these states are doing it, all the ones that are in these states where there's troubles. You know, you think you go in and you mail in a ballot, they scan it in, you voted. Or you walk in, you fill out the ballot, and then you walk over to the scanning machine, you watch them put it in, you voted. They don't tell you that's not your vote. They tell you that's just this, you know, if you knew the truth, that's just the scanner. It's not voted until they decide to transfer it to the tally machine. You don't know if there were any errors that you don't get to correct. They get to decide what your intent is. How can voting be secure when they make you come in, won't let you take a picture of your vote, but there's 8 steps in between where other people can usurp your vote? I don't call that transparency. I call that a system set up for the success of robbing votes.
So how a lot of people are saying, like, how do we fix this? How do we fix this moving forward?
This is so easily fixed. I've been having discussions about it because everything I work on to be able to, you know, you can tell if a human filled out the OVID or not versus a machine. But most people don't know these machines. If you printed a ballot with pre-filled OVIDs, the machine also reads it. Well, why would you print something with the vote already on it? And so they don't catch these things. And so now that I've worked to catch these things, a new type of election system can be created where all these other voting machines that are out there should become the new fax machines, and nobody needs one. And so they're going to become very heavy paperweights, and we have a new way to do it. But let me just give you an example. You know, Krebs said before the president got rid of him, because he certainly wasn't an educated character, he says it's paper, folks, paper can't be hacked. But I showed in Georgia that if you were looking at districts, and you can tell if a district is conservative or liberal, that their ballots were different. But when you really look at it, one ballot for the liberal district was printed exactly as it was supposed to be printed, except it didn't have the barcode on it that allowed it to reconcile to a signature. So they neutered the audit there. However, on the conservative side, that ballot, which should only be 1% micron, meaning 1 micron out of alignment is the allowable, well, that ballot was 1,300% out of alignment. So think of it this way. We've all gone to a candy machine or a car wash or a vending machine. You put in the dollar bill. It's a faded, crinkled dollar bill. The machine goes, wait, this doesn't work. And what do? You keep on trying to put it in until finally you find a bill you have. You put in and it goes, okay, this is a good bill. I'll take it. Well, that's adjudication. Now let's look at Fulton County. 1.1% adjudication. That means you put a vote in, but somebody on the opposite side gets to look at it and decide for you what you meant because the machine can't tell. In 2016, that was 1.1%. In 2018, that was 2.2%. In this 2020 vote in Fulton County, it was 95%. That means 95 out of 100 ballots that went in, it said, I can't read this right, and allowed somebody on the end of a computer without notifying you to look at the ballot and say, oh, I think this is what they meant.
Isn't that now, illegal?
No, it's exactly how they elect. They're bending the rules. So think of it as a sighting device. You know, you've seen laser tag or you've seen fighter pilots and you watch a little crosshairs. And when the crosshair is on the target, you pull the trigger. What happens if that crosshair is totally cross-eyed and it points to over here where you should shoot, but the bullet comes out of a curved barrel and shoots way over to the right? That's what's going on. They make the machine look in the wrong places. So to the voter, when they feed the ballot in, you think, okay, it's accepted. But what's really going on behind the scenes, the machine's going, wait, what? I can't see if the ovid's right. What's going on? And then it allows anybody in there to say, oh, this is what they meant. And not only do they vote for you, if you left any blank, which a lot of people do, they don't want to vote some, they go ahead and fill those in for the candidates they like. And then, by the way, if they use the lie, well, that was a spoiled ballot, you spilled coffee on it, we had to do a new one, they just vote the new one and then destroy the old one. It is totally ripe for corruption.
So no voting. Ooh, that echo again. Goodness. Sorry. You have headphones by chance? So new voting systems, right? We've got new voting systems that you say that will, rectify this problem. And I think I honestly believe it starts at the paper, just like you're saying. And, there's a tangible that you need somewhere along that supply line, for lack of a better word. But how do you force these governors like Kemp to install these new voting machines when they know it's going to rectify the issues that they've got going on right now that they're benefiting from?
Well, my particular belief is the reason that it has gone this far is not as much the people that rigged the votes, but it's all the people, primarily conservatives, that have been apathetic and not involved and allowed it to happen right under their noses. Now, think about this. When color printers came out, we were forced to change our dollar bills because you could just scan an image of it and print them and they would work. We're not adopting the same technology standards in our voting that we have to use in our everyday life. Just look at the last decade. Your passports have changed, our dollars have changed, your driver's license have changed to have the right embedded technology so you could not steal somebody's identity or the government couldn't be fooled. And these systems are intentionally broken that way, but everything is there to fix it. But it's only going to be fixed when America demands it. And so I think if you're upset about the election, whether you are left or right, because I believe people are equally hurting. And so here's what I mean. You can easily say on the Trump side, let's just call it 80 million people, hypothetically, they're upset. But I think also on the Democratic side, you have a lot of people that say, if this is what being a Democrat is, I don't want to be it. Because remember, if an election can be rigged in any way,
it can also be rigged against you. So what happens if you're on the left and they start writing laws you don't like, but you can never change them because elections are rigged? The second part is the people say, I'm never going to vote again because my vote doesn't matter anyway. You have to understand what you're doing when you say that. You're actually saying they don't have to rig an election again because I'm not going to vote. Then they all automatically won. And so people need to get pissed and stay pissed right now and demand visual change, meaning you need to demand that your lawmakers show you, not talk to you and not talk at you, show you the actual way that they're going to fix this and never let it happen again. And I believe that starts with the paper, and that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. I think all of this can be redone. It can be redone in super fast time. It can be totally non-hackable. And I do believe as a voter, the moment you vote, you should have a certified copy of that vote, exactly the ballot you cast in. You shouldn't have to guess. You shouldn't have to beg for a copy. It should be right there. And then if there's ever a recount, you know exactly your vote was counted the right way. You need to have a copy of it. And these things are so easily fixed. And so I'm trying to work with the states right now to show them the path to this. But with all of it, you still deal with the same things. The question comes, do they really want to fix it or not? Now, these have election boards and everything else, and all these levels of interruption, interjection, and people saying, hey, that's my bailiwick, why are you jumping in? So I say, if you are anywhere where your elected officials have just swept this under the rug, and if they're not going to do something to now 100% promote and enforce voter integrity in a meaningful way that you can understand and see, then you have to embrace the fact that you live in a place and are ruled by people who do not give one iota what you think. You're the one that has the power, and 120 million people, at least right now, are letting a few hundred thousand elected officials decide our fate. We wouldn't accept this in any other aspect of our life. Why are we still accepting it now?
I think that, I think that people, those 100,000 or several hundred thousand that are in control understand that people are upset on both sides of the aisle. And what we're dealing with now is this complete demonization of anybody. Anyone who speaks up about election integrity in this country, literally being targeted by law enforcement, being censored off of social media, being deplatformed, financial institutions coming after them. People feel overwhelmed by that. How is it that we can kind of cross that gap? You know, what's happening in Arizona right now is really frustrating to me, that they're literally looking to bring in Dominion to audit Dominion. How do we counter this? Like, how do we get a critical mass of people in those positions to make the right decisions?
What I find really interesting is, you're right, they'll use Dominion-approved people to audit Dominion-approved machines. And by the way, the two people selected in Arizona, their certifications had lapsed until that story broke. And then magically, they end up being certified. Oh, they're certified now. It was due to COVID. But I think it's funny because one of them had been decertified like in 2017. There was no COVID then. And so the rule of that is, it's about words. And so if you accept just their words, hey, we're going to do an audit and we want total transparency. No, I'm not going to shut down the pipeline. No, I'm not going to open the border wall, stuff like, if you accept words, shame on you. So now we have to go to audit even the words. And so we need to have living, verifiable proof. But yes, they're intimidating people that have a voice like yourself that reach hundreds of thousands of people. But as many say, I would rather die on my feet than my knees. It is going to take everybody in both the digital realm and the voice realm to fight to have their voice heard. What I hope to do is to bring some educational pieces and content to the voters to help them understand what really happens, and then to empower the voter to be able to explain it, not only to their family members and stuff they're bickering with, but to get it out there in public knowledge. Remember, this is one mass suppression project at the same exact time. And so nowadays, when it's banned on Twitter, or it's banned on Facebook, or it's taken off YouTube, or it is defunded, you basically can now accept that as one thing. That person is telling the absolute truth. And until all of us understand that, you know what? Twitter's not such a wonderful place, or Facebook's not such a wonderful place, if we start shutting off our data and tracking and or don't use them, then you can have them basically talking in a vacuum. I think in short order, where you have a cancel culture that can complain enough to make a retailer stop a product, well, we have to do as conservatives what has never been done, and that we have to start complaining too. You know, people that are for rule of law and people that are for the Constitution really don't get out and protest, or don't get out and get their names shown and fight the battle. It's considered distasteful. Now, you can show up for a rally for the person that's absolutely right, but it has to be more than that. You have to vote with your voice, and you have to vote with your dollars. Very simply, you know, I learned this a long time ago. I was upset years ago when French troops or the French government stopped supporting our American troops. And so long ago, I boycotted all the products that were French. And so you've got to remember that if you're giving these platforms your time, you're investing in them. If you're giving these platforms your data, well, you're investing in them. If you give these products your money, you're investing in them. You want to change this tide? Absolutely refuse to give your time, goods, mindset, and knowledge to those companies. And you've got to walk away in the new digital walk away. You've got to support platforms that do support free speech. And I guarantee you, as more censorship occurs and as more isolation occurs, you're going to find some of these platforms that are the new quasi-banks. You're going to see a whole battery of laws cropping up that is going to affect them in a way they never thought of before. Remember, you have people out there like Jack Dorsey at Twitter originally promoting, hey, this is a free platform. We want to exchange ideas. We want to exchange that. Well, that was your inducement to join that platform, and join you did. And by using that platform, you invested in Twitter's vision and belief, but all of a sudden Twitter changed their belief system. Well, that's a classic case of what's called DPTA, Deceptive Trade Practices Act. And they basically deceived you to get you in, to get you to invest in them, and then they switched the product on you. That's very simple for local law to understand and to file suit, to get an injunction on based on deceptive trade practices. So how about we just start shutting Google and Twitter down by zip codes on local levels that say, you know what, you're misrepresenting the facts because we can't see the real information, and judge starts slapping restraining orders on them to stop, and they have to cut that zip code out until they enforce it. We have to fight it the same way they fight conservative values. And sometimes that's the nasty stuff, including lawsuits.
I love that. That's awesome. I got the echo again. Sorry. it's awesome because I've been trying to come up with good ways to get people motivated, because this is not over. I mean, it's really not over. And it's a little bit scary for a lot of people right now. And we're kind of wandering out in the wilderness. But I want to, before we end today, and you tell us what you're doing next, like what's the big thing you can tell us you're up to, if you can. I love your opinion on what's going on with this GameStop debacle.
I think that the world, for the very first time, has its eyes open. I've said this, and I still believe it today. If you believe that nefarious stuff happened in the election, I think you should be thankful that right now it sucks so much. And here's how I mean that. If that election was corrected the next day, it would have just been another election. We wouldn't have learned anything. If that election was corrected a month later, we still wouldn't have learned anything. Just think of election day to now. What have we learned? We have learned that censorship is really real. We have learned that they'll censor us more if we don't agree. We have learned that they'll take away our rights if we don't agree with them. We have learned that you can't trust the count. We have learned that you can't trust the financial system. We have learned you can't trust the judicial system. And so now collectively, not only in the United States, because the entire world is watching, our eyes are open. You can't stick your head in the sand anymore. And I believe that's on both sides of the aisle. You now know it's real. The rhetoric is over. And now that your eyes are open, you can be empowered to do something. My goals are very simple. I want to bring that transparency and easy to understand educational moments to the American public. Because how could you know that even though your vote was scanned in the machine, that your vote actually didn't occur then? How could you have known that it just goes to a fob and it has to be transferred to another location to tally and somebody could swap fobs or lose that fob? Well, you didn't ever stood for it. Well, now the great eye opening has occurred. These things can be pointed out and you can make better decisions. So they're going to scream. They're going to keep on going. But if we all work together and we keep on sharing the information together and we keep on dialoguing about it, you can't put your fingers in your ears and go, I'm not going to talk about it, because we bought a myth. We bought a myth long ago. And that myth long ago was never discussed religion and politics. Well, look where it got us, because we had no debate. So we know how this ends. And since we already know how it ends, because other countries have been here, you have to make a decision. You either believe in the United States of America and you're a patriot and you want this fixed for everyone, or you're going to roll over and play dead and you're just a battery unit in the matrix. But you have a decision to make of what you are and what you stand for.
Amen. You've really done a lot for this country over the past, 6 months. And even before, I mean, you've revolutionized how we transact with one another. You've done a lot in your lifetime. And I know you're not that much older than I am. So God bless you for that. And please keep in touch if there's ever any information you need to get out to folks or anything. We've gone around. The light has made its way around the corner, Jovan, and they're not shutting us up. So appreciate your time today so much.
Thank you so very much for having me. And remember, this is now up to us. We've waited too long for others to fix it for us. We now have to do this ourselves, but we have to do it ourselves because it is not about us. It is about our country, our children, and our grandchildren. And if you want your children and grandchildren to grow up in America that you believed you had and you loved, then you better get into the battle right now.
Amen. Yes. That's what I'm talking about. People need that. Thank you. Is there anywhere people can follow you? Like, how can we watch what you're doing? And like, do you have a website or anything like that?
Yeah, well, what I make sure I do is I always use my hashtag. My hashtag is hashtag Jovan, J-O-V-A-N, Hutton, H-U-T-T-O-N, Pulitzer, P-U-L-I-T-Z-E-R. It's also why I filed a trademark on my hashtag, so I own it. So when you put in that hashtag, just put in any service you're in, anywhere you are, any platform in the search, just put hashtag Jovan Hutton Pulitzer, and you can find me, and I'm there. I try to stay open. I try to like the likes back. I try to keep myself open to people and reports and be transparent, so you can always find me there. And I'm still on every platform because I need to be, and I am here in the battle. I will not give up. Not only will I create the tools to fix this and count it right, but I believe I can fix all future elections to be authentic and not able to be stolen. And I hope in short order to give the American people their voice back, because right now a like doesn't mean anything, because that's just a click. You need a physical manifestation of your vote that lawmakers and media understand, and that's my next big project to tackle. I'm going to give America the hammer and scorecard against the media and the legislators.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Radio Influence strives to bring you excellence in podcasting. We work with radio personalities like Ian Beckles, news and political pundits like independent journalists Frank and Tracy Beans, experts from the sports world like veteran football scout and coach Chris Landry, pro wrestling personality David Penzer, MMA experts Jason Floyd and Daniel Galvan, and strength and conditioning coach Jeff Crochelle. If you're looking for food, sports, music, entertainment, politics, no matter the topic, Radio Influence has something for everyone. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.